New champ.
New champ coming through. New NXT North American champion coming through, baby.
Come on.
Looks good on you, too.
We're taking over this.
It's Saturday night. That means it's time for the Don Tony Show.
The wait all week long is finally over. Get Don Tony's perspective on current affairs in the world of pro wrestling and much more. The Don Tony Show.
And now, your host, the man, the legend, Don Tony.
Not a bad 7 days for Dominic Mysterio. Tell you, WWE, they're taking a little bit of notice. Not only crowd reaction, but internet buzz, searches, just ratings. A lot of interesting news with regards to Dominic Mysterio. We got a lot of stuff to get into today. I want to welcome everyone to this latest edition of the Don Tony Show. What is it, the 22nd of July? Wow, I can't believe we're already in August. Feels like it was not too long ago that we were talking about WrestleMania and bitching about Cody Rhodes. Now we bitch about LA Knight. Listen, I have quite a few things to say about the LA Knight stuff. And yeah, I have come to realize that if you think like Vince McMahon, you will say dumb shit like Vince McMahon. We'll get into that in a little bit. Dominic Mysterio technically made history on SmackDown yesterday. Now, it's not necessarily a statistic that I think will be in the record books, but it's definitely something that you have to acknowledge. In one week, Dominic Mysterio main evented Raw. Dominic Mysterio main evented NXT, winning the NXT North American Championship. And yesterday, technically, main evented SmackDown. I know we closed with the Tribal Chief and Tribal Combat and Tribal this and Tribal that. Doesn't the Tribal Combat sound almost feel like an old Star Trek episode, Amok Time? Do you remember when Captain Kirk and Spock fought each other? The only difference was that Spock was in heat at that time. Remember, it was over a woman. Kind of feels that way. But I'm not complaining. But Dominic Mysterio, I tell you, man, the last 7 days, you know, give the guy his due. And I'll tell you this much, too, in the ratings department. Here's a little tidbit. Oh, Ronnie, thank you very much for that super shout out. By the way, oh, you know what? Before we even go any further, I plugged this on Twitter literally 10 minutes before I went live. I did not post it during the week. Because there's always assholes out there that'll say, oh, you're putting it up there just to get more attention on yourself. No, we're trying to do something nice. But if anybody super chats today and for tomorrow's sit-down episode, all of the revenue that comes in, I take it and I forward it immediately to Shawnee, who is Shotzi Blackheart's sister. Her GoFundMe, she is battling liver cancer right now. And, you know, they're trying to raise money because, you know, it's not. Listen, I'm pretty sure that she had health coverage, but there's large deductibles. There's a lot of co-pays, a lot of medical expenses, a lot of things that insurance does not cover. So just, you know, a little something. I mean, you know, we're probably not going to make a dent on anything, but it's a nice little gesture in support of Shotzi. And if anybody out there wants to donate directly to the GoFundMe, I almost closed the link. Here it is. You could go check it out at tinyurl.com/helpshotzisis. I made that tiny URL because it's easier to remember. Just remember, help Shotzi sis. Say that fast 10 times, and I give you extra credit. So, best wishes go out to Shawnee. Okay, Dominic Mysterio, check this out. A little tidbit that I pulled, because out of curiosity more than anything else. We've had, in the last month, we've had Seth Rollins on NXT defending the World Heavyweight Championship against Bron Breakker. We've had Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams take on Damian Priest and Finn Balor on NXT. And this past Tuesday, we had Dominic Mysterio win the NXT North American Championship over Wes Lee. So I was going back and I said, you know, I want to compare the ratings for their main events. And Bron Breakker versus Seth Rollins, that main event drew 869,000 viewers for NXT. Pretty damn decent number. But you know who came close to beating that number? Dominic Mysterio versus Wes Lee. That rating drew 844,000 viewers. And Seth Rollins and Bron Breakker had like a 10-minute overrun. Remember that? They had about a 10-minute overrun that did over 9 because you had people tuning in at 10 o'clock expecting to watch whatever comes on after NXT. So there is a possibility with an overrun, Dominic could have passed Seth Rollins as far as ratings-wise to main event NXT. That's kind of baffling. Damian Priest and Finn Balor versus Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams did 715,000. Not a bad number. You know, still beats a lot of their regular programming and some other shows when people like to play games and compare AEW ratings to WWE. The demo, the demo, the demo. The cutest one yesterday, and listen, I don't like the Elite's personal behavior, okay? I appreciate their in-ring work. I thought Blood and Guts was great. But, you know, I will also criticize the opposite side, too, the ones that are radical for CM Punk and anti-Elite. And I was looking at the rating that came in for Dynamite, which we'll get into in a little bit. And, you know, Blood and Guts obviously, you know, got a decent number. I'll give you the breakdown a little bit. But you had the anti-Elite. The only thing that they could grasp was that MJF and Adam Cole's demo was higher than Blood and Guts. Even though Blood and Guts had a bigger rating, the demo. Now, think about this. Think about this. When you got geniuses online that say that somebody was ranked first on cable, and then you look at it, and you're like, no, there was shows that had over 2 million viewers. What are you talking about? But they're going on that demo category. Most of the time when you see ratings touted, it's usually based on the demo, not overall viewers. But when it comes to Blood and Guts, it's about the overall viewers and not the demo, because Adam Cole and MJF won the demo for that night. So it just goes to show you a little bit of hypocrisy that goes on. Just to wrap up a little bit about Dominic Mysterio, because I saw NXT, and I thought it was a fun match, and it was a hell of a lot of fuckery. There was something on SmackDown yesterday I didn't like, besides the LA Knight stuff, but something that I'm sure nobody even thought about, but I'll bring it up. So this was the thumbnail from July 8th. That was my thumbnail. That is a tribute to the Beatles' Abbey Road album cover. That is why Judgment Day is in that position that they are. And I had to do a little bit of editing. And I thought it was apropos to bring it back because I think this is more suited now. I added the Women's World Championship to Rhea Ripley. I added the NXT North American Championship to Dominic Mysterio. And I added to Finn Balor a brown paper bag. I actually had tried a few different things. I put a WWE Hulkamania lunchbox in his hand. I put a McDonald's Happy Meal for kids in his hand. But I thought the brown paper bag was probably the most respectful. And, you know, this is one of the reasons, I want everybody to understand, this is one of the reasons why Dominic Mysterio is NXT North American champion for a short period of time. Everybody has something, with the exception of Finn Balor. You see, like, this was taken right after NXT. Damian Priest has the briefcase. Dominic has the belt, Rhea has the belt, and Finn has a fist. So there is going to be jealousy going forward. You will see little tiny seeds, maybe not so apparent, but you got to pay very close attention to Finn Balor in the near future. And the thing that's going to be really interesting is if you kind of think outside the box, could fans start showing, I don't want to say sympathy, but could fans start showing maybe like, man, you know, Finn Balor, you know, deserves a championship maybe more than anybody else in the group. Rhea Ripley, you know, that's a little different. So does that make fans kind of, you know, like flock a little bit more in support of Finn Balor? Like, why are they not giving him anything? Could Finn Balor end up turning babyface? I have no idea. I don't get paid that much to make that analysis. But Ronnie, thank you for the 20 spot, Ronnie. He sent this in based on my, I thought you meant JD from New York because you wrote JD pick, but I haven't put any picks up of JD recently. Based on my Judgment Day pick, will Finn Balor win a championship anytime soon? Get well, Shawnee Blackheart. When I say Shawnee, it's not like middle initial E, it's Sean E-E at the end, Shawnee. Shawnee. And it's probably more of a nickname, so. Get well soon, Shawnee Blackhearts. Thank you for the 20 spot, my friend. And again, everybody who sends something, don't feel like you have to. But anything that comes in this weekend, it's going to go right to the GoFundMe. And I will post a screenshot next week. I'm transparent. You could go there and see for yourself. You know, as far as Finn Balor winning a championship soon, the one thing that just keeps crossing my mind is, could we see Damian Priest and Finn Balor winning one of those tag team championships off of Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn? I think it's time. I know some people feel that we're getting a little bit too much Judgment Day on TV. I disagree. If you actually add up the amount of TV time, yeah, they appeared on NXT for 2 weeks. So what? If Roman Reigns or the Usos or Solo Sikoa or anyone else in the bloodline were to, if you, they said, would you like to see them on NXT next week? Everybody would be like, you know, that little kid, that animated file, the little baby from Family Guy when he's like this. People would love it. But they're not going to NXT anytime soon, even though it doesn't come off as a demotion. So they're on NXT to help the younger guys, give them a little boost, give it a little attention. I think NXT, the last 6 weeks, has been a hell of a lot of fun. And what's great about it is they're not getting involved in people who might be a little too soon. Let that sink in a little bit. Yeah, people were not thrilled. Carmelo Hayes, you know, going down to Balor and Priest, you know, more than once for Balor. But you look at the food chain, no, he's an up-and-coming, rising megastar. And he got a little rub yesterday from Bobby Lashley because SmackDown was in Orlando, which I'll show you some screenshots in a little bit. But I think there is a chance that Finn Balor and Damian Priest win championships, you know, the tag titles, at least one set. You know, I see a problem with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. And the problem is that you don't have many tag teams on Raw that could be vying for a championship. Alpha Academy, I'm a fan of. It's not the right time for Alpha Academy. The Viking Raiders, hell no. In this year, nowhere near that discussion. Creed Brothers, don't know if the Creed Brothers will end up on Raw. Last night we saw them in suits backstage on SmackDown. They, I think, could very well end up on SmackDown. So there isn't a plethora of tag teams to feud with. And it feels like we've kind of burned through Imperium. We've burned through Judgment Day. Alpha Academy, Viking Raiders in this year, not really. So I personally think in the very near future, we're going to see number one contenders for the tag team titles for Raw and for SmackDown. The interesting thing about it is Raw and SmackDown are the only titles right now, the tag titles, they're the only titles right now that represent a brand. You know, Seth Rollins, the World Heavyweight Championship. Even, listen, let's be honest. Some of you out there still a little bit confused as far as the name of Asuka's belt and the name of Rhea Ripley's belt. Like, what's the, you know, the big difference between the two? It feels like two women's World Heavyweight Championships. It's no longer the Raw Women's Champion and a SmackDown Women's Champion. And in many ways, all because they had to put Bianca on SmackDown while having the Raw Championship. I mean, and they had to put Rhea Ripley on Raw while still having the SmackDown Championship. No, the funny thing is, I agree. Handing over titles, just switching. You know, just switching titles. You know, give me mine, give me yours, I give you mine. Yeah, it's stupid, it's lazy. But you know what? If Asuka and Rhea Ripley would have done that months ago, or even you want to go a little further back, Bianca Belair and Rhea Ripley months ago, we would not be talking about this right now. And even if you introduced the new championship design, it still would be easier to identify. Raw, SmackDown. Raw, SmackDown. It's a little confusing for some people right now. But I think it's time. Does Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens need to lose both tag team championships? No. And trust me, if they lose a tag team championship right now, I don't think the internet is going to have their balls in a bunch, irate, angry. Oh, they only won it at WrestleMania and they took it off already, this and that. I think people are getting spoiled because of Gunther. I think they're being spoiled because Bianca had it for a year. I think they're spoiled because Roman Reigns has it for 2 years. I think they're spoiled because the Usos had it for about a year. So people are starting to get used to these very, very long runs, and that's fine. The problem is, when you get stuck on that, there are people that are peaking, and sometimes you can't predict where the perception of their peak is. And we've seen some tag teams, and we've seen some individuals come and go. You know, rise. I still bring up the Street Profits from SummerSlam of last year. I get why the Street Profits... Thank you, Ronnie, again. I get why the Street Profits did not defeat the Usos last year, but up to the present, even if there's a new judgment, another Hurt Business formed, that was their peak. And since that loss at SummerSlam last year, the Street Profits, it's almost like, you almost feel like creative is saying, well, you know, they're still in their 20s, they're not even 30 or around that. You know, we got plenty of time. We got plenty of time. Let's just tread water for a year. Let's just put them in little spots here and there. Eh, we'll wait a year or two. That's what it kind of feels like. But meanwhile, you know, you got other tag teams. And LA Knight right now, we could talk about it, LA Knight. Let's get into it. Yesterday on SmackDown. But let me say one last thing in closing about Finn Balor. There's one of two ways they're going with this, with Finn Balor. There's one of two ways. It's easy peasy, one of two ways. Either Damian Priest and Finn Balor will become tag team champions, and everybody in Judgment Day will have gold. It's almost like the Bloodline. When the Usos and Roman had it, I mean, Solo Sikoa didn't Solo... on my honeymoon, I saw it in person, and when he had the North American Championship for one night, technically, you know, 1 week. But the Judgment Day all holding gold up. That's one way of going about this. The second way is Finn Balor is the only one, and Finn Balor starts coming off as the weak link. We all are set on Damian Priest turning babyface down the line. What happens if it's Finn Balor? You know, it's something to think about. I know it's a little bizarre at the present time, but, you know, it's either Judgment Day, they all get gold, or Finn Balor is going to be drooling, jealous, and that will ultimately put a knife in the heart of the Judgment Day. So now let's talk about LA Knight. Oh, boy. I got to pull up my stuff. Okay. Yesterday, we were having a fatal four-way to determine who faces Santos Escobar next week, to then determine who faces Austin Theory at SummerSlam for the United States Championship. So the participants yesterday was Rey Mysterio, Sheamus, Cameron Grimes, and not for nothing, I don't get this aura that WWE is extremely high on Cameron Grimes. I mean, he was great in the match yesterday. Crowd is, you know, getting behind him a little bit. I don't see where he leapfrogs into the next level. I'm just being honest, and I have nothing against Cameron Grimes, and you had LA Knight. All right. Before the match happened, WWE put a poll up. The poll was up for about 15 minutes, and they basically asked, who do you have winning this four-way match? And here are the poll results. Cameron Grimes last with 2.9%. Then you had Sheamus with 6.1%. Rey Mysterio with 9%. And LA Knight with 82%. So yesterday, Rey comes out, big pops. I got to point out two things about that match in a few moments. Rey Mysterio comes out, great pop. Sheamus comes out, great pop. Cameron Grimes comes out, polite pop. LA Knight comes out. Now, unfortunately, I cannot show you the video, but for everybody on, even on video, I put a little picture up of LA Knight, screenshot from yesterday. For everybody else on audio, just close your eyes and just listen to this fucking reaction to LA Knight yesterday. And this is not manufactured. This is not piped in. If you look at the crowd, you could see that the crowd reaction matches the audio. Listen to how this crowd erupts yesterday. And fun little thing that is starting to happen. We're now getting the yeah movement. Not too long ago, we had the yes movement. Now it's the yeah movement. And honestly, if you go, it's a different pop. People were in support of Daniel Bryan back in the day. Daniel Bryan was like the everyday guy that you just wanted to get behind, the underdog. This pop is nothing like the Daniel Bryan pops. The Daniel Bryan pops sounded different. This is how LA Knight's crowd reaction was yesterday. I'm watching the video in the background, but I can only share the audio. LA Knight is looking around in amazement.
Let me talk to you.
He's looking around, and I tell you, it's got to blow him away how over he's become.
SummerSlam's right around the corner, and they call it the biggest party of the summer, right? Yeah. Well, I'm always invited to every party that I want to go to, and the party that I want to go to is a party that involves me taking that U.S. championship. Yeah. So tonight, what we're looking at, a little stepping stone action, because I got three men that stand in my way. But one by one, each of you will fall because you all realize whose game is it with everybody saying. Yeah.
So this is a... Okay. So, he hits the ring, and it's almost like maybe it's better if he doesn't talk. You know, Wade Barrett said it yesterday, that the more L.A. Knight talks about himself, the more confident he gets for himself, and the more confident the fans are for him. But every time he cuts one of these promos predicting victory, somebody in the back is got other thoughts. So Austin Theory is at ringside for this match. He's hanging out and, you know, not doing much on commentary because he's not all that great on commentary. And for a brief moment, he gets into it with Rey Mysterio. That would actually play a factor a little bit later on. At one point during the match, Rey Mysterio and Sheamus were hitting the 10 bells on Cameron Grimes and LA Knight. Sheamus was doing it on LA Knight, and Rey Mysterio was doing it on Cameron Grimes. It was funny because Cameron Grimes, or Rey Mysterio, is so short, he had to actually step on one of the ropes for height just so he could reach over and nail Cameron Grimes. But this match is going on, and you got that vibe, you know, for LA Knight. And we're going on, and, you know, during the match, we start getting fuckery. What ends up happening is Rey Mysterio, towards the latter part in the match, you know, is working with Sheamus, and then Sheamus obviously is trying to win the match. He turns against Rey Mysterio. Rey Mysterio sets up Sheamus and Cameron Grimes for a 619. And Rey Mysterio covers Cameron Grimes for a pin, but Austin Theory pulls him out of the ring. And then he throws him into the steps, which was funny because Rey Mysterio, listen, with all due respect, when you beat up Rey Mysterio, sometimes it just looks funny. I mean, from Seth Rollins ripping his eyeball out to, you know, you just look closely, you know what I'm talking about. But here comes Santos Escobar. Santos dives onto Austin Theory. They brawl in the crowd. They go away. So now I'm thinking, okay, cool. Rey Mysterio is out. He got thrown into the steps. You know, he's selling it. We're at the finish of the match. He's out. So now it comes down to LA Knight, Sheamus, and Cameron Grimes. And my thinking is, okay, maybe Sheamus could hit the bro kick on Cameron Grimes. And then LA Knight chucks Sheamus out of the ring and steals the victory. I know it is a pussy move, but we have seen it so many times in the past. And then I started thinking about last week's show. Does anybody remember this from last week's Don Tony Show episode? Easy peasy. So next week, I wonder if we're going to get Rey Mysterio versus Santos Escobar in a friendly, you know, competition to lead to maybe, but I'm rooting for LA Knight. Yep. Rey fucking Mysterio. Somehow he gets back in the ring and selling no sign of getting thrown into the ring steps. And we get a couple of back and forth, and Rey Mysterio ultimately pins Cameron Grimes. So next week, Rey Mysterio takes on his buddy, Santos Escobar. Now, if you remember way back when Dominic and Rey showed up on an episode of NXT one time, and they had a little interaction with Legado del Fantasma, we talked about it a few times over the probably year or so, more than that, that one match that WWE wants to have, and it's a dream match, and is something on Santos Escobar's bucket list, and that is to face Rey Mysterio. That was a match that they have been wanting to do forever. Now they figured out a way to do it. My problem is with this is, and I don't mean to sound a little too sexual right now, but message to WWE, you're no longer giving the fans blue balls. You're pissing them off. You know, sometimes you get teased. I usually use the dog biscuit reference. Take a dog biscuit, go up to the dog. Hey, you want a treat? And when the dog's about to eat it, you pull it away. Hey, Fido, you want a biscuit? And then you, I'm only kidding, Fido. Come here. You want the biscuit? You put the biscuit, and you pull it away. You know, now you're teasing the dog. Now the dog is like, I fucking want that. I'm going to kill you, you bastard. That better be good. And that dog wants it and wants it and wants it. What happens if you do it too many times? You put the biscuit in the, near the dog's mouth, and the dog just walks away. And if the dog is smart enough, he pees on your floor, pees all over your important court papers. You know, this is no longer teasing. And I brought this up about a month ago. And maybe it didn't resonate with a lot of people a month ago, but I'm guaranteeing you it is now. I'm not defending WWE here. I wanted LA Knight to win yesterday. There's no reason to keep teasing this. But again, what I said a month ago is, if you're looking at this in the eyes of WWE Creative, take a moment, pretend you're in WWE Creative. You have to be sitting back and saying, he's got three of the five top-selling shirts right now. He's insanely over. Fucking people are right. He's trending all the time online. Everybody and their mother wants to see him win. And the more we don't give him that victory, the louder the pop gets. The more merchandise is being sold. The more noise LA Knight is getting. So, again, I'm not defending WWE Creative, but that's the only logic I could come out of this as far as WWE Creative. But it's getting to a point now where you're no longer teasing fans. Now you're angering fans. But I will say this. I don't have the clip. Went too long. I don't want any copyright issues. But you're more than welcome to go back and watch it for yourself if you think I'm exaggerating in any way. When Rey Mysterio got the win yesterday, I mean, nobody is angry. You know what's interesting? You remember the Yes Movement? You remember how the fans went rabid against, like, Batista? Because Batista, at that time, I mean, look, those pants that he was wearing, those skinny pants, and the way he dressed, you know, didn't help him. But remember, Batista came back, and Batista was in that position for WrestleMania, and the fans were happy to see him back until the Yes Movement got in the way. And anybody that was interfering with the Yes Movement or was perceived as a threat, especially a threat manufactured by WWE management and creative and Vince, fans were going to go against it. And the fans fucking turned on Batista and turned on him to a point where I think he got a lot of bitterness in his mouth. The fans are not doing that right now towards Rey Mysterio. But soon, fans are going to start getting bitter at others getting an opportunity over LA Knight. And I'm going to add a little twist to it because I got this weird knack of always nailing things, maybe not even thinking about it. I got one for you in a minute. Go back to SmackDown yesterday when Rey Mysterio got the win. Look at the crowd reaction. Almost everybody was cheering. Almost everybody was happy. You know, giving him a pop. I mean, yeah, he didn't pin LA Knight. But honestly, if my favorite is LA Knight to win this, and I'm really invested in LA Knight winning it, I don't care what baby faces that I like that are in that match. For me, as a wrestling fan, as an LA Knight supporter, if Ray gets the pin, I'm going to be like, come on, man. The fuck? SummerSlam, come on. The fuck? That's how I would feel. You look at that crowd yesterday, you would never thought that. You watch the reaction when Rey Mysterio won, and you'd be like, you would have never even thought LA Knight was in that match. Real truth, but you're going to start getting fans to turn against others. WWE has gotten into this habit, and it's getting people mad. You know, if you remember even the scenic roots, remember with Drew and Sheamus last year? Remember the Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens stuff? Like, instead of going things organically and it feels natural, like they would just milk it for 4, 5, 6 extra weeks. Sheamus and Drew was 3 extra weeks. Like, they're at the point now where, you know, you think back to what Triple H said months ago, and he got nothing LA Knight at Mania. And then you go a little bit further, he gets nothing at this event, nothing at this event, nothing in this event. And his pop is getting louder and louder and louder. I mean, you're getting to the point now where you're angering people. It's not funny. There's no reason. Listen, Santos Escobar is tremendous. His match against Austin Theory yesterday was great. But if you follow the WWE mantra, him pinning the United States champion in a non-title match is only designed to give the suspension of disbelief that he just pinned the champion, that he could very well win the United States championship. I'd be shocked if he does. They've done this repeatedly. The Usos lose in a non-title match last year more than one time. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn lose in a non-title match. Oh, they give that suspension of disbelief that so-and-so could beat the person. And then when the title match happens, nothing. Nothing. So when you look at SummerSlam, okay, Rey Mysterio is a Hall of Famer. Who would you rather see face Austin Theory at SummerSlam? Rey Mysterio, Santos Escobar, or LA Knight? It is one of the biggest events of the year next to WrestleMania. Does Rey Mysterio really need that at this point? I don't think fans give a shit right now if Rey is going to, you know, give a rub to Austin Theory. You know, help elevate him to another level. The evil Austin Theory beats up, you know, the Hall of Famer. He got WrestleMania with John Cena. You know, like, Austin Theory's career is not going to be damaged or destroyed if he doesn't get a rub from Rey Mysterio. And Santos Escobar, you know, Roosh, there's a lot of rumors that Roosh's contract expired in AEW. I don't know if it's true. We'll talk about it Wednesday. I'll get some info. But, you know, if you insist on something with Santos, either get him a tag team partner and down the line give him a tag team championship, or fucking put him back in NXT for a little bit. Put him back in NXT. Seriously, I don't even mean that as a demotion. But, you know, you see what is coming out of this. You know, Zelina Vega, we all support Zelina Vega. But you saw going into Backlash at Puerto Rico, Zelina Vega started getting all these wins, and it's all designed to give the suspension of disbelief that Zelina Vega may have a legit shot against Rhea Ripley. Look at what has happened since Backlash. Santos Escobar, they're following the same template for Santos Escobar. And Santos Escobar is definitely championship material. Problem is, all of the belts have a stranglehold right now. Owens and Zayn have both sets of tag titles. Roman Reigns has everything. Gunther is on his way to history. The 24/7 title is in the garbage. You know, the women's championships, you know, is obviously off limits. So what do you got? You got one championship. That's why LA Knight didn't win the briefcase that I've said before. LA Knight wins the briefcase. What is he going to do? He ain't going to fuck with Roman right now. Roman's in the middle of tribal war. He ain't going to fuck with Seth Rollins. One's a Raw, one's a SmackDown, and you're not going to end Seth Rollins' reign so soon. That's why Rollins is going balls out. And here's a little news. I'll give you a little quick news tidbit. Seth Rollins was on Impulsive with Logan Paul. Two little news tidbits to bring out of that. And one you got to pay very close attention to. Logan Paul revealed that he is trying to get WWE to approve to have SummerSlam open up with him versus Ricochet. And the reason why he wants to be the opening match is because his brother is going to be fighting in Dallas, Texas the same night. And he wants to walk the aisle in support of his brother, Jake Paul. Jake Paul is fighting Nate Diaz. So Logan Paul is asking WWE, could we go on first so I can leave, hop on a plane, and get to my brother's match so I can walk him down the aisle. So that's probably going to happen. But that's really not the big news coming out of this podcast. It's Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins has revealed that he's got quite a few injuries. We knew that he's been banged up, but some of these injuries sound a little bit more serious than you think. This is his quotes here. Seth Rollins says, quote, "My knees have been bugging me since WrestleMania. My lower back has been bugging me since 2019. I should probably get surgery on my back, but I'm trying to do what I need to do to make sure I don't need surgery." He then said that he's had a couple of stem cell treatments that help for a short period of time, but at the end of the day, it does not get the job done. And he said, "I wasn't taking time off. I was just idling while I was on stem cell. I'm pretty much working a full-time WWE schedule. I find the treatments helpful, but temporary, that's it. Long-term, it's faded off a bit." And here's the big question. Here's the big question. You know, the fun little back and forth right now is, who is the biggest draw on Raw? Seth Rollins or Cody Rhodes? You know, I kind of would even put Judgment Day in the mix at some points. But the thing is, Seth Rollins is going to have to go take time off. He has to take time off. You know, when you have your body barking at you like that, and he's having the level of matches that he's having, you could tell he's not just on cruise control in the ring. The guy is going balls out. And the pain and the injuries, what's going through afterwards, you have to ask yourself, could Seth Rollins keep this pace up until WrestleMania 40? I personally don't know. But if the day that Seth Rollins takes a decent amount of time off has to be the day that Cody Rhodes not just makes an appearance, you know, gets everybody singing his song, cuts a promo, passionate promo, has a match against someone, and then rinse and repeat. It's got to go to the next level. So you do not put the World Heavyweight Championship on Cody Rhodes. Here's some more news. Cody Rhodes, they had a red carpet ceremony for Cody Rhodes' upcoming documentary. All right, this is one of the pictures from the red carpet. It's called The American Nightmare, Becoming Cody Rhodes. It will be on Peacock July 31st, I believe a week from this Monday. So this is a very, very important documentary, because not only is it going to, you know, strengthen Cody Rhodes' position in the WWE, and yes, you're going to see a lot of little dusty references brought up. And then you're going to start thinking about some of the things you've been watching on TV and some dusty reference. Oh, okay, now I get why they did this and did this. You know, it's a lot of what you're seeing is a variation of Dusty Rhodes' rise to the top. But in this documentary, it pretty much sets the table up for Cody Rhodes going after Roman Reigns. So when this documentary comes out, it doesn't immediately set the match up, but it gives you a clear and concise path of what Cody Rhodes needs to do. That's why I keep saying it, not to be a jerk, but Cody is going to finish the story. Stop trying to change it. WWE ain't going to change the story. You know, I don't blame fans for trying to change the story for LA Knight, but WWE obviously, and listen, you know, take note of how many people are silent right now about this towards Triple H. You know, everybody, whenever something is really bad or really goes against what we expect or want, everybody, oh, Vince is back in creative, Vince is back in creative, Vince is back in creative. No, what you're getting right now is a boatload of Triple H. This is something that has been planned for quite some time. The only difference is that WWE never expected this kind of reaction. You know, when I see younger wrestling fans reacting to LA Knight, like I've never seen any reaction like this. Yeah, I'm reminded of how old I am. I think back to Austin. I think back to even Hulkamania. I think back to other things. You know, there's been people, even Triple H making his comeback when he showed up at the Garden 20 plus years ago. People went bananas. But, you know, this is something that's a big deal. And, you know, if Cody Rhodes is going to take over Raw when Seth has to take time off, you can't put the World Heavyweight Championship on him because that kind of takes away a little bit of the story. A week from this Monday, when this documentary comes out, go out of your way to watch it because it'll give you a little bit of clarity where it's gone, why things happened the way they did, where it's going from now, and where it's likely going to end up being. If Cody Rhodes does not defeat Roman Reigns and finish the story, it will be Lex Express, Drew McIntyre, Clash at the Castle. It will be all of the utmost failures all combined into one, injected with a little bit of steroids as well. It'll be one of the biggest disasters, disappointments, failures, epic failures in wrestling history. And that's not going to happen. Just something that we always keep talking about, and I'll keep planting it out. We got to hope Roman Reigns does not get injured between now and WrestleMania. We got to hope that. You got to be very, they got to be very, very careful with Roman Reigns going into WrestleMania. That guy tears a muscle, breaks a bone, gets some type of ailment, relapse of something, boy, does that put a fucking... Then you may have to put the World Heavyweight Championship on Cody Rhodes and then give Seth this time off. It'll start a chain of events that we wouldn't expect, but I think WWE obviously has a backup plan. They have backup plans for backup plans, let's be honest. So, unfortunately, Rey Mysterio gets the win. Now, later on SmackDown, Austin Theory demands a match against Santos Escobar. And Adam Pearce says, yeah, I'll do the match, but the title's not on the line because, you know, we got SummerSlam. Santos Escobar actually defeated Austin Theory, as we said earlier. This is probably the move of the night. Santos Escobar and Austin Theory on the top rope. And it looked a little sloppy at first, and Austin Theory doing a little jawjacking. And then Santos Escobar hits a Hurricanrana. But this is Rey Mysterio 1996 level. For those that are on video, if you look at the move, just watch Santos. I mean, just literally dove in the air and nailed it. And give Austin Theory credit, because Austin Theory, if you watch some of his matches closely, you know, you see that his timing is not 100% yet. He flips himself, and yeah, all wrestlers do that. I got a kick out of people that were ragging on Dominic Mysterio during his North American Championship match against Wes Lee. There was a point in the match where Dominic Mysterio pushed Wesley up in the air, and Wesley came down and almost landed on his head. If you watch it in super, 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 super slow-mo, Wesley is the one that actually pushes himself off, and Dominic Mysterio is just going along for the ride. But when you watch it on full speed, it's perceived that Dominic was just reckless and this and that. But, you know, Austin Theory, that's one of his problems still. It's not just momentum. It's not just Mike. The momentum is because of WWE. Let's make this clear. Momentum is because of WWE. We had this conversation last week about, or it was Tuesday, and quick plug. If you haven't checked it out yet, Kevin and I did a special episode, second week in a row. We talked about a lot of the AEW roster, you know, whose stock is up, down, peaked, declined, skyrocketed, plummeted. We got into a few other things as well, and just a little tidbit. I don't have the graphic made up yet, but a week from this Tuesday, we will be doing SummerSlam preview and predictions. But I was talking about Orange Cassidy. Somebody had brought up about how many championship title defenses he's had since winning the belt, and he is by far the top champion in that company. I mean, the amount, but keep in mind, that's because Tony Khan puts him on fucking TV every week. That's because Tony Khan gives him 15, 20 minutes in these matches, not a five-minute bullshit. You know, you give somebody that much time and that many weeks, and you give him decent opponents on top of it, yeah, of course it's going to look impressive. You give someone a five-minute match, seven-minute match, and, you know, you have a commercial break or two, you're not really left with that great feeling inside. So we have Santos Escobar hitting that beautiful Huracanrana, jumping up and move, you know, shifting his body in the process. Then he hit the Phantom Driver and pinned Austin Theory. So, again, this is to add the suspension of disbelief that Santos Escobar may have Austin Theory's number. We got to see what happens next week, because next week we're going to have Rey taking on Santos, and the winner is going to face Austin Theory. You know, it's not the match that we wanted, and where it goes from here, I have no idea. You know, it would be funny, Bray Wyatt. This is what I was going to say earlier. You know, Bray Wyatt, I keep getting asked this every few weeks, and I don't really get into it much on these shows because I don't want to be one of those guys online that says Bray Wyatt is nearing a return. You have people saying that right after, a month after WrestleMania. You had the loser boozers that said it, you know, like a week before Saudi Arabia. And then the boozer losers said that going into Backlash. He's nearing a return. Go Google it. Go Google it. There's some wrestling news sites that have reported that seven times in 5 months that he's nearing a return. Keep saying it. Eventually it's going to happen. But I, from people that I talk to, have told me that Bray Wyatt is getting close to a return. Now, on social media this week, Bray Wyatt retweeted this bonus pack that WWE has for the 2K23 video game. And I looked at it, and I got a kick out of it. The Uncle Howdy is, the graphics are pretty impressive, but this is a really interesting Wyatt pack because they have Zeus in it. I don't know why they have Zeus in it. They have, Zeus is the Hall of Famer. I don't know if that's normal that they just put, like, a Hall of Famer, random Hall of Famer. But you look at everybody else. Joe Gacy, a lot of people thought that he was going to be involved in the group. You know, it looks like some freaks, I guess. But I wonder, could you imagine the backlash online if Bray Wyatt returns and the person he goes after is LA Knight? I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I just start thinking to myself, all right, Bobby Lashley is forming some variation of the Hurt Business. But who does Bray Wyatt fuck with when he returns? Seriously. And I'm starting to think to myself, would they dare revisit that? what happens? It, you know, and if you put LA Knight over, you know, I just hope that doesn't happen. I really hope that doesn't happen. But my honest opinion, Santos Escobar has no shot winning that United States Championship. Something else that happened yesterday, I didn't like it. I like the Shotzi stuff, and I like Bailey being freaked out, but there was one part of it that I did not like. I got to share it with you. I got to share it with you. I could swear in the afternoon on Friday, they said that on SmackDown, it's going to be revealed who Asuka's opponents are going to be. Opponent is going to be at SummerSlam. And I'm like, yeah, opponent. There's going to obviously be a three-way. But before SmackDown even started, we saw online that it's going to be a three-way. They made it official before SmackDown aired. Originally, it was supposed to be revealed on there, but we now know it's going to be Charlotte Flair, Asuka, and Bianca Belair going up in a three-way for the Women's Championship. So yesterday, we get a match between Charlotte Flair and Io Sky. It went about 10 minutes, and I enjoyed the match very much. Bayley was on commentary, and then we got some good, and to me, some awful. I'm just being honest. During the match, Bailey is at the ringside area, and a video pops up on the screen, and it's more Shotzi taunting Bailey, and there she is, and she's cutting her own hair, and you know, teasing Bailey that Bailey's going to get a haircut. So Bailey is scared shit because of the video. And the video is great. Shotzi just looks like she's lost it. And that's good because she can actually work that character well. So during the match, Io Sky gets the upper advantage on Charlotte. Bailey gets freaked out. And when Io Sky turns around, she notices that Bailey is leaving the ringside area. She looks around and Bailey walks off. I'm sorry. And she's walking off. Now, okay, she's freaked out. Fine. I thought this was so stupid. Io Sky, after Bailey walks off, if you watch it closely, look at what Io Sky does. Now, keep in mind, she's got the upper hand against Charlotte. She won Money in the Bank, kicked ass in Money in the Bank, and you have Io Sky doing this.
Just amazing.
Now, Bailey telling Io Sky, I can't be at her anymore. Bailey, obviously.
Help me. Where you go? Help me. Help what? That made Io Sky look so stupid yesterday. Okay, where you going? That's fine. Charlotte is literally laid out. And Io Sky is like, help me. You know, when Paul Bearer was in cement, save me, help me, save. That's where you go for help. You're drowning in the... Help me. Charlotte is laid out. And Io Sky missed Money in the Bank. One of the top women. Help me. Help me. I hated it. I fucking hated it. And what happens? It's not like Charlotte Flair then cheated and beat her like 2 seconds later. They had a competitive match. Charlotte Flair ends up getting the win. But it just came off stupid. I mean, I understand why for the storyline, why you leaving me, you know, but still, I didn't like it at all. And then after the match, we see them in the back. And Bailey's little suitcase, carry-on, is on in the locker room. And Bailey is freaked out. The back of it looks a little cut. And why she turned it around slowly, I didn't see any mirror behind the bag, like something must be on the opposite side. She turns it around slowly, and it reveals a picture of Bailey with a scissor stabbed through it. So she freaks out. Io, grab your shit. Let's go. Let's go. But you know, I almost thought Bailey was going to say, come on, you stupid idiot. That's what I was hoping for. But the segment was good, but it also had a lot of corny shit in it as well. So yesterday, because they were in Orlando, we had a lot of appearances from NXT stars. We had Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams. Why is it that when wrestlers sit ringside, they always got to have their shirts open or no shirts at all? You don't see like regular people like doing that. I just took notice of that yesterday. Tiffany Stratton was there. Tiffany Stratton actually had a dark match yesterday, and a few people that were there DM'd me and said she did pretty damn good. Tiffany Stratton was in appearance. I'm going to save one of these pictures for something else in a minute. We had the Cavan. Oops, excuse me. Let me take this off. Hold on. There we go. All right. We had the Cavender twins. Now you understand, like, why the Bellas, you know, the Bellas, with all due respect, it's like a dozen eggs. You know, you open your refrigerator and you got a dozen eggs that, you know, today's the 22nd of July and the eggs say, like, dated July 19th. And, like, they're probably still good. You know, you put them in a pot of water and you see if they rise to the top or they stand up erect, you know. But, hey, you know, sometimes after a while you got to get some new eggs. And they found their new twins, and, you know, they got a lot of social media presence, and these are the twins of the future for the WWE. Former basketball players, the Cavender twins were there. We also had some cameos. There is Tony D and Stax. As Jey Uso was going to the ringside area, hey, how you doing? How you doing? Hey, let me sell you some tribal stock. Remember Samoa Joe at that tribal? No, we're not going there. So Jey Uso walks by. He sees Tony D and Stax. He walks a little bit further, and he bumps into the Creed brothers. Remember, the Creed brothers lost that Loser Leaves NXT. So will they be SmackDown bound? I think that they will. But we also had this. Wes Lee and Dragon Lee and Call Me. I don't have the video clip. I actually downloaded it, but I forgot to put it on the show over here. But see the girl on the right? It was pretty fucking funny yesterday because she kept doing the sign like, call me, call me. So we have Wes Lee, Dragon Lee, and Call Me. They were sitting at ringside, and I thought about it during the night, and I'm saying to myself, where the fuck was Wes Lee during Dominic Mysterio versus Butch's match? Would he go for ice cream? Would he do promo pictures in the back? In storyline, the Judgment Day all got involved, causing him to lose the North American Championship, and he's sitting front row, yay! And Dominic later on has a match against Butch for the North American Championship, and Wes Lee is nowhere to be seen. Did WWE even, like, take a step back and say, you know, maybe we shouldn't have him sitting ringside, because why would he just sit there eating popcorn, you know, with his masked brother? Not really. He's a brother from another mother. And do nothing. The whole Judgment Day fucked you up and stole your championship, and you're sitting at ringside, and you do nothing while Dominic takes on Butch. I thought about that yesterday. I'm like, why even show him? Show him in the fucking back then. Show him in the back. You put him front row sitting next to Dragon Lee and nothing. We also had another segment yesterday. And yes, I'm going to go there just for fun. Last week, we talked about Bobby Lashley talking to the Street Profits. Come inside. It's nice. It's cool. In the limo. Let's talk a little business. Quote, unquote, business. A little hurt business. So that was last week. yesterday we were graced with Bobby Lashley showing up, and he sees Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams. Oh, these are the two guys that I was looking for. So now those two guys are talking to Bobby Lashley. So now you're thinking to yourself, huh, could we possibly have a little bit of a hurt business in NXT and on WWE TV with the Street Profits, Carmelo Hayes, Trick Williams? It's going to be interesting. But I couldn't help but share this. When I was looking for pictures, because I always look for good quality pictures to screenshot during the shows that I do here, I came across this. And I just looked at it and I'm like, caption this photo. Just look at the photo and caption it. Bobby Lashley's got a look of concern on his face, and he's pointed to Carmelo Hayes, and Trick Williams has got his weird little smirk on his face. And I'm like, okay, let me caption this. Trick Williams just said to Bobby Lashley, hey, Carmelo wants to go in the pool with you. And Bobby Lashley is like, huh, him? Get it? Him? Him? And Trick is like, yeah, let's go swimming. Yeah, I don't know. I just saw that picture, and I was like, yeah, that could have like a funny little, you know. All right, whatever. So we'll see. Who does he meet next? Does he meet Wesley? There's a few people that they could still interact with. I think eventually Omos, Cedric, Shelton are going to come into the picture, and then we may actually see that little bit of a split. I still wonder if we could possibly get a six-man tag at SummerSlam. We'll see. But that was something yesterday as well. So, yesterday, let me just take off my NXT pictures. We'll talk about Dominic, then we'll talk about Tribal Court, and then we'll wrap up with some other news and other things going on. As I said earlier, Dominic Mysterio pretty much making history this week for WWE, main eventing Raw, main eventing NXT, main eventing SmackDown, all title matches. And yesterday, for some reason, and yes, I know, I saw the little sissies online complaining, oh, they found the draft. Why are they on SmackDown? The draft. Oh, fuck that. We're getting a little bit extra good shit yesterday. Dominic Mysterio is there with Rhea Ripley. Kayla Braxton is interviewing him. And he's talking about, Dominic suddenly can't get the word baby out of his mouth and keeps sticking his tongue out. Anybody notice that? You notice that with Dominic? I'm the NXT champion, North American champion. Baby. Remember I showed you earlier the pictures? Even the black and white picture. Did I delete it already? I already deleted it. You remember earlier? Hey, I'm the new champ. Anyway, he's in the back with Kayla Braxton, Rhea Ripley, and he's touting his win. And here comes Butch. People online, they think they're rebels because they write Pete Dunne. His character name is Butch. Shut the fuck up. So Butch shows up and he's like, you know what? I think it would be great. I think that title should be on the line tonight, and I think you and I should go at it. And Dominic is like, I don't even have my gear. I'm not even dressed, blah, 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 blah. And here comes Shawn Michaels. And Shawn Michaels, he's like, hey, you know, I think that's a pretty damn good idea. Dominic will be taking on Butch for the NXT North American Championship. So Dominic doesn't look too thrilled. Shawn Michaels, you know, seems to be having, and the fans popped. Fans loved it. We're getting Butch versus Dominic Mysterio. And the crowd was into it. And Butch, and it was funny because when Shawn Michaels walked off, little vintage Pete Dunne, when he went like, he looked at Dominic and went like this, and he walked off. I thought that was funny. The match was good. Pete Dunne, now I'm saying Pete Dunne, Jesus. Slap yourself, DT. Butch, you know, I think if I'm going to complain at all about the match at all, I think Butch with the fingers a few too much, because Dominic did not really sell it, especially the second time when Butch goes like this. That's something Raven used to do in ECW when he yanked the fingers. If you look, Dominic literally 3 seconds later takes Butch's neck and, you know, whips him off the ropes with it. And I'm like, you know, he's not even selling the fingers. You know, you're simulating like you just like dislocated a finger or something. And the match was good. Towards the latter part of the match, Rhea Ripley goes and gives Dominic a chain. It wasn't like a little like chain like you wrap around your wrist, like a little like metal. She gave a chain like you would like wrap around like a garage gate, like a yard and a gate to like prevent pit bulls from breaking out. She gives him this gigantic chain and he's holding it and Ridge Holland shows up, you know, the most hated WWE wrestler, which is so fucked up. But the fans live, they did not shit on Ridge Holland, which was good. Ridge Holland grabs the chain out of Dominic's hand. We go to commercial. We come back from commercial, and here's Pretty Deadly. Pretty Deadly is there. We get Elton Prince, Kit Wilson, and they're trying to run away. And here's where I got mad, because I'm thinking to myself, crap, Butch is going to get counted out, is he? You know, and I see the referee going, one, two, and I'm like, forget Pretty Deadly. Finish the fucking match. So Ridge Holland chases both members of Pretty Deadly off. And Butch luckily gets back into the ring. But unfortunately, Dominic, before he can make it back to the ring, Dominic smashes him in the corner post, hits him with another move, and then goes to roll him up. And they're all tangled up in the ropes and give, I can't remember her name, but that referee credit for the WWE ref. She edges. Singular referee. She is Edge's choice. I can't remember her name right now. Maybe someone in the chat room could bring it up. Little early morning brain cramp from yours truly. She is telling Dominic, you're caught up in the ropes. And Dominic moves Butch a little bit away from the ropes and pins him 1, 2, 3. And I love that aspect with the ref because they're all tied up in the ropes. And the funny thing is Dominic didn't even use the ropes for leverage. He was just going for the pin, but since it was so, Jessica Carr, thank you, Vigil. Jessica Carr, you know, to make it look more, you know, realistic because they're tied up in the ropes, she's telling him, no, you're tied up in the ropes. And then Dominic and Butch move themselves a little bit further away and she counts the pin. 1, 2, 3. And you win it a match, Dominic Mysterio. It was a fun match, but obviously there is a much bigger storyline going on right now with Judgment Day, and we were not seeing a Butch championship reign this quickly. So, wrapping up SmackDown yesterday, we had the rules of engagement. I.e. a contract signing. That's technically what this was. Rules of engagement. There's a table in the middle of the ring. Jey Uso has a chair. He's sitting. Roman Reigns is there. He's sitting. He's holding his one singular championship representing the title for both brands. Paul Heyman has the other two titles. Solo Sikoa is standing with his arm folded as always. Now, early in the night, they're seen in the back, and Roman Reigns is looking at his, you know, his flower, you know, necklace, and he looks over to Solo Sikoa, and it's funny. I noticed this. Whenever they do a segment with Solo Sikoa, Solo Sikoa always ends up looking the other way. If you ever noticed that, like, he'll always be like this, and then he'll always do this. Just watch my face. He'll always do this. He does it every fucking time. So Roman Reigns looks at Solo Sikoa yesterday, and Solo Sikoa is nodding his head yes in the back, and then he does this. It's pretty funny if you watch it. So they come out there, and Roman Reigns is, you know, he looks at Jey Uso. He says, you still want to do it? And Jey Uso says, yeah, I still want to do it. And Roman's making him do this. He has to get Roman because Jimmy's in the hospital. By the way, little torn cartilage, you're in the hospital for 3 weeks. You know, how's it about he's home recovering from his injuries? You know, so he's still in the hospital. Roman says Jay doesn't get it. He even cracks a little insult to Jay. Keep calling him Little Jay, Little Jay, Little Jay. So he calls Jay Uso a soldier, a pawn. That's all he is. And Roman Reigns signs the contract. And as I'm watching this, I'm like, man, that kind of like rules of engagement, all this is a contract signing. So Roman signs the contract. He gives it to Jey Uso. Then here's where it gets fun. Jey Uso opens the contract, opens the book, tears the contract up, and closes it quickly. Mad, pissed off. And Roman Reigns is confused. Jey Uso says, we already have a contract. We're blood. The bloodline. They don't need no contract. This is blood. This is tribal combat now. And Roman Reigns looks startled. Tribal combat. Apparently this is some Samoan ancient fight. Now my mind's starting to race. And I'm saying to myself, tribal combat, okay, let's see where this goes. Are they going to have war paint on? Are they going to be barefoot? Are they going to be... I think all the members of the Inouye family will be there. Don't know if The Rock will be there, but I think the Wild Samoans will be there. I think Rikishi will be there. I think, I know some people are going to be like, oh, maybe, you know, some other wrestlers, Jacob Fatu, and it might be stretching a little bit. But they're talking about tribal combat. So Roman says, do the elders know about this? And Jay says, it was their idea. So Roman is kind of startled. And Jey Uso, you know, I guess tribal combat is basically no rules. Because Jey Uso, instead of talking about bashing him with tribal objects, Jey Uso is like, if I want to light you up with a stick, I can. If I want to grab one of these chairs, I will. Put your ass through a table, I want to. Put your ass through this table, too. Hell, if I want to grab that lady's slipper and slap you upside your grumpy little head, I will as well. Crowd is loving it. Jay basically says he can do whatever the fuck he wants. So Roman tells him, shut your mouth. He was just missing the know your role. Would have left. Know your role. Shut your mouth. Roman says he's been running this business for almost a decade. And he says, let's go. So they get up. And as they get up, first thing Roman Reigns does is he puts the flowers on the title. He takes it off, puts the flowers on the title. Then they go to the center of the ring. And here's where I got my Star Trek flashbacks. They actually show each other a sign of respect. Handshake. They put heads together. They put the heads together. Respect. So it's almost like, you know, tribal. You know, like, it's almost like, you know, you're showing respect to your opponent before you kill them. That's really what it is. So Roman starts to back off. And I guess Solo Sikoa, because he's a lot younger, maybe Solo Sikoa was brought up in the internet age and not the tribal age. So Solo Sikoa is like looking around and he's like, the fuck was that? And Roman and Solo is like, fuck this. He throws the table upside and he wants to go and Samoan spike Jay. And here's Roman. And Roman stops Solo. And Solo, remember, down the line, Solo and Roman will have that split. So Solo Sikoa starts looking at Roman Reigns and he's like, the fuck are you doing? And then here's Jey Uso. Yeah, this is tribal combat between me and Roman. This is respect between me and Roman. I didn't say shit about you. I didn't say shit about you. But you ask yourself, why did Roman stop Solo if it's tribal combat between Roman and Jay? Jay was like, fuck that. Jay super kicked Solo Sikoa anyway. Roman slowly gets out of the ring. Solo Sikoa is holding his mouth. Paul Heyman looks like he's seen a ghost. Jey Uso is in the zone. Crowd is loving it. We go off the air. But as I'm looking at it, I keep thinking to myself, from the fucking Star Trek, Amok Time. Anybody that's an old-time Star Trek fan, you know the episode I'm talking about. Like, it's like one of those episodes. But again, if they're going to do tribal combat, don't you kind of feel like we need special clothes, garb? That if it's tribal from the ancestors, that there might be face paint? Are we going to see a little bit of an Umaga look to this? Are they going to brawl, you know, with the elders outside the ring? How does Jimmy Uso get involved with this? So let's see where it goes. I'm not criticizing it. I'm not praising it. I'm kind of intrigued by it, but that's what we're getting. Roman Reigns versus Jey Uso for the undisputed WWE Universal Championship. I thought it was great. I mean, it's definitely going to be interesting to see where they go with this. But if it ends up just being a no DQ match, I'm sure it's still going to be good. But I think it's going to be lacking a lot. You kind of feel like it's got to go in a direction where it's got to feel unique. And I think that's what's going to happen. I think we're going to see a lot of props. I think that you might see a lot of flowers. I think the elders will be there. And I don't think they should be sitting in attendance. We don't want, like, when Brett took on Bob Backlund and his mother was sitting at ringside, Helen and Stu, and everybody's like just like looking like in a gaze, in a daze, like in the air. We want the elders around ringside. Shit, if they even want to go a step further, maybe you see like fire. Maybe you see like them getting, maybe we see rituals. Maybe we see them do some type of, you know, something before the match. But I think this is going to be more than just a no DQ match. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. But, you know, not a bad episode of SmackDown yesterday, but the LA Knight stuff. Yeah, I get it. I totally get it. You know, I'll keep saying, like I said before, you want to tease, you want to give more, like the more you pull back, the more people want them, that's fine. But now you're at a point where it's no longer, let's see how much longer, let's see how much higher we could get this. It's almost like if you're gambling in a casino and you double down and you double down and you double down and you got this giant set, sooner or later, you're going to lose that hand. Now, LA Knight's stock is not going to plummet because his treatment is not his fault. But it's going to get to a point where fans are going to feel like you cried wolf a few too many times, WWE, and you're starting to piss off people. You know, why piss off your fans? I mean, sure, when we watch matches, sometimes we don't get the outcome that we want. Cody Rhodes versus Roman is a great example of that for WrestleMania. Sometimes, you know, the winner of a feud, you know, somebody loses the match but wins the war. When I was a kid, when, you know, when Snuka dove off the cage onto Morocco, it's an epic moment. A lot of people seem to forget that Snuka lost that match that night. I wanted Snuka to win the Intercontinental Championship. So, you know, sometimes the outcome is not what I want. But here, it feels like they're doubling down a few too many times. And this is something that WWE's been doing for the last 2 years. Many, many times. And I think fans are starting to get a little bit pissed off at that. Not to the point where, listen, when people say to me, oh, I turned the TV off after what they did to LA Knight, I don't believe that for most of the time. You know, but pissing people off, I absolutely believe that. Absolutely. So, all right, before we go any further, got to give a couple of super shout outs. Mark Hicks, showing some love. Thank you for the five spot, my friend. And that will go directly to Shawnee Blackhearts. And their last name is not really Blackheart. Somebody said that earlier. You know, we don't need to reveal their real last names, but it will go to her GoFundMe. And I thank you for that. He's just sending just lots of love. Thank you, Mark. Guardian of Chaos with a 10 spot. Just a little something to help out, DT. Awesome. Thank you, Chaos. You're one of the very few genuine guys in the garbage of this IWC. God bless my brother. Thank you, Chaos. I appreciate it. You know, I try to be straight up with everything. I said this the other day. I'd rather be praised by few than hated by many. I mean, that's kind of like what the mantra is now for me. And, you know, I get people, oh, bring back the old DT. I don't even know what that means. Like, you want me to just curse more? You prick. Like, what did they actually mean? Do they want me to just get really, really nasty with people? Like, you know, I just go wherever it goes. I don't hold back. But, you know, sometimes you got to be a little bit real with things. So I sacrifice. No question. I lose numbers and revenue and stats because of it. But at the end of the day, you know, I don't like turning my social media on. And trust me, 15 years ago, even 10 years ago, you know, it's not fun to get like tons of instant messages at 2-3 o'clock in the morning, or sometimes a cell phone call. Dude, you better go on your Facebook page. Why? What's going on? Fucking people are spamming it with all like nude shit and pedophilia stuff and this and that. I mean, Facebook, for some of you younger people out there, you don't know what Facebook was like 10, 15 years ago, maybe 10 years ago. I had to shut down Facebook pages for the show, for the shows because of it. You know, there's just a lot of hate out there. I just, you know, I try to stay away from the toxicity. I'm no innocent, you know, genuine guy here. You know, I mean, like, I'm no, like, altar boy. I'm no, you know, but I just try to stay away from the toxic stuff. Thank you, Chaos, for that. And that'll go directly to her, as will Daniel Hayes Valadez. Thank you for the 5-spot, Daniel. Do I not get the feeling that they're going to merge the U.S. and the North American titles with one more Ray versus Dom match? Wow, that is a fucking fascinating idea, man. You know why I say no? Guys, that isn't... Listen, I don't like to, like, make somebody super chat feel more important than others. Even people send triple digits sometimes. I mean, I appreciate it all. But this is a great, great question that I didn't think about myself, and I haven't seen anybody bring up as well. You know, I don't think it's going to happen, but could you imagine Ray beating Austin Theory? Becoming, because you know what? Dominic did say something yesterday. When he got interviewed by Caleb Braxton, he said that I came to SmackDown to show my father, my deadbeat dad. Remember this yesterday? I want to show my deadbeat dad that if he wins the United States Championship, he's just the champion for the United States. I'm the NXT North American champion, baby. I'm a champion for the United States and like 25 other countries. He did do that yesterday. Let me put it this way. Could that happen? Sure. Do I think it'll happen? You know why I say no? Dijak, Ilya, Carmelo Hayes, Trick Williams, Joe Gacy, Wes Lee. There's tons of others that are escaping me right now. There are too many good guys in NXT that unfortunately are not going to be able to become world heavyweight champion. They need a singles title to gun for. There's so much love being given right now towards Wes Lee for his recent run as North American champion. Some people think he's coming to the main roster. That's why he lost. I'm not sure yet. But Wes Lee would not have been getting this level of love right now if that North American championship was non-existent. He would have just been a guy on a winning streak in NXT. So what you're saying is very possible. I don't think it should happen, because there are too many secondary guys in NXT that need to have a championship. You look at Dominic right now. Dominic holding that championship up. You know, if you get rid of that championship, you don't have that scenario happening again anytime soon with anybody else. So that absolutely could happen. That is a fabulous idea, good or bad, but I don't think it should happen. I think you absolutely got to keep that North American Championship. Listen, it's like Raw and SmackDown. It's the same formula. Raw, you have a heavyweight champion, and you have a secondary champion in Gunther. SmackDown, you have a heavyweight champion, which is Roman Reigns. You have a secondary champion, which is Austin Theory. I know, big drop, but whatever. NXT, you got Carmelo Hayes as the heavyweight champion. You need a secondary champion. Some people think the women should have something like that. I disagree, because the number of matches that they have on a weekly basis is not on a level, just equal number with the men. So I think that would get lost in the shuffle very quickly. But it's not a bad idea. Excellent idea. Rojo Bear with the 5-spot. Thank you, Rojo Bear. Awesome. Much love, much love. I think we are up to, what, about $54 that we will be sending over. And then tomorrow we got the sit-down. So I know that is a show that we get, you know, generated some nice super chats tonight's. And Sundays we'll all go to Shotzi Sisters GoFundMe. But thank you, Rojo Bear, for that. Thank you, Raul Harris, for the 5-spot. Really want to hear my thoughts on the dance segment on AEW. I'll say it like this. People, when MJF and Chris Jericho were doing their thing, singing, doing a dance, at the time, people popped. Then months later, for some reason online, people were like, oh, what the fuck? Why did they do that? That fucking hurt MJF's... But if you remember, people, like when it was happening, oh, it's epic, amazing, it's awesome, it's great, this and that, oh, it's awesome. And then like a couple of months later, people were like, whoa, I can't believe they fucking did that. MJF, he's the devil, and they have him looking like a goof. You can't have it both ways. You got to either take one or take the other. MJF, in the end, he turns on Adam Cole. He's the devil. That doesn't change. Him doing the dance stuff, you know, I can't... I thought it was stupid. Daniel Garcia makes me laugh. Sammy Guevara... The only reason why I didn't like Sammy Guevara doing it is because he went from the Spanish God, another person who can't keep his tongue out of his mouth. Then he got more serious. When they had the Four Pillars match, going into Jericho's face, you know, it seemed like a more serious Guevara. Him and his wife expecting a baby. And then, you know, he's doing the dancing stuff with Daniel Garcia. I mean, it's only one night, so I'm not going to criticize it. The MJF dancing, though, it's like... I don't know, like, it just, it to me, I thought it was dumb. I thought it was dumb, you know, but if this is a shift in MJF's character permanently, then I'd be fine. You know, he's doing, listen, I'll give you a good one. It's main, for some of you, it may not be a good example, but some of you would be like, that's a great example. Back in 1995, the Sandman was an ECW. And the Sandman was a pretty fucking scary dude. I mean, he had the feud with Tommy Dreamer, Singapore Canes, you know, did some wild matches, barbed wire matches with Mankind, with Cactus Jack, Sandman overall was a guy you don't fuck with, you know. But there was a match one time, it was him and Too Cold Scorpio versus the Public Enemy. And if anybody remembers a Public Enemy, they would do this and this, you know, and go like this, you know. And what happened was, and this was not planned. This was not planned. Too Cold Scorpio would also dance. I think he used to come out to Whoop, There It Is, you know, before he came out to Jungle Boogie, you know, months, year later. But they did a dance-off. It was Public Enemy dancing. Too Cold Scorpio dancing. And then the crowd started going, go Sandman, go Sandman, go Sandman. And Sandman goes in the ring and he starts doing this. And then woman, God rest her soul, Nancy Benoit. She is in the ring, and then the crowd starts going, go Nancy, go Nancy. Oh, no, go woman. And then she starts doing this. And then Public Enemy start, like, getting into it, like, whoa, you know. And then Sandman gets pissed off. And then they just start brawling. It was a moment that was not planned, and that's why it came off so good. Wednesdays felt scripted. Wednesdays felt scripted. That just, listen, I enjoyed Blood and Guts. I enjoyed, you know, I liked some of the MJF, Adam Cole stuff. But the people out there, oh, you can't split them up. You got to do this for a year. No, no, no. He's a fucking devil. He's the devil. The devil will wreak its ugly head sooner than you think. So if it would have been unexpected, if it didn't feel scripted, I would have liked it more. But to me, it was a little too scripted. Thank you, Raul. And Mighty Mighty. Wow, Mighty Mighty. I completely forgot that you tune in all the way from Singapore. Thank you for the five spot, and thank you, as always, for supporting the shows. Much love. Mighty Mighty is a long-timer, everyone. And it's one now it's, what, 1:40 in the morning in Singapore. So thank you for staying up late tonight and hanging out with us, and thank you for that super chat as well. Much love. Thank you, Mighty Mighty. Hope all is well with you, my friend. All right. Let's start bringing this home a little bit. Want to give congratulations to Pat Buck. You know, Pat Buck, formerly of WWE, now heavily involved in AEW. He and his wife just gave birth to a beautiful baby girl. So I have it on the screen. Congrats to the lucky couple. By the way, Monday I got a little bit of announcement. I know some of you already know what the news is, but we got another pregnancy that it's not getting any news, but I talked to the people involved, so we'll talk about that on Monday. I know they just had the reveal of Alexa Bliss, and it was funny because the other day, I think it was Tuesday, I said Ryan Seacrest. She's not married to Ryan Seacrest. I know it was Orion, but, you know, I don't follow either one, so I made that mistake. Rampage, something you should know. Rampage yesterday, we had Chris Statlander retaining her championship over Marina Shafir, and unfortunately, and I'm just calling it like I see it, Chris Statlander, they are doing the same template as they did with Jade Cargill. There's no storylines. There's no feuds. There's nothing. It's just Chris Statlander just fight someone, and then we might get lucky, and someone will show up afterwards and get into it, Chris, and, oh, that sets up the next match. It's kind of like what Pac did at Blood and Guts. The only reason why Pac was put in Blood and Guts was to fill a spot, and then he walks out just so they can he could then take on Claudio Castagnoli at Ring of Honor. It's like, you know, the spur of the moment, you know, like changes that lead to instant. Chris Statlander's title reign is now becoming quite boring, to be honest with you. Johnny TNT and QT Marshall, they along with Aaron Solo lost to the Acclaimed and Daddy S, and we'll bring up the Acclaimed in a moment. But probably the bigger news, and I don't know how people feel about this, I personally think it should have been Orange Cassidy, not winning it, but they did a Royal Rampage Battle Royal. They had both rings, obviously, because this was taped the night of Blood and Guts. And the winner of this Royal Rampage will get a shot at the TNT Championship, currently held by Luchasaurus or Christian, depending on who you ask, at All Out. And Darby Allin won this. The other participants were Nick Wayne, Matt Sydal, Minoru Suzuki, Swerve Strickland, Angelo Parker, Ethan Page, Matt Menard, Toa Leona, Jay Lethal, Commander, Bishop Khan, Isaiah Cassidy, Jeff Jarrett, Jake Hager, Matt Hardy, Brian Cage, The Butcher, The Blade, and Big Bill. He's now going to face Luchasaurus at All Out. Why didn't they have the winner of this match face Orange Cassidy for the All International, I almost said All Atlantic Championship, the International Championship? I don't know how I feel about that. Darby versus Luchasaurus, it's not like a match that I was clamoring for, but that is going down as a result of Rampage. We should also take notice that that means no match for Sting at All Out. Sting, if he's healthy enough, Sting will probably fight it all in, but the idea of him doing it back-to-back ain't happening. Thank you, Maggie, for the kind words. Much love. NXT Level Up yesterday. There were a lot of people upset because Quincy Elliott appeared in a losing effort. Him and Ikemen Hiro lost to Hank Walker and Tank Legend. Danny Palmer over Izzy Dame. And Dante Chen over Javier Bernal. Now, because of Dominic winning the North American Championship, it originally was supposed to be Mustafa Ali versus Wesley at the Great American Bash. That has been changed to Mustafa Ali versus Dominic Mysterio. I have a feeling Wesley may be added to that match, and it's a three-way. I think on Tuesday we may see an angle where Shawn Michaels feels that because of Judgment Day's interference that Wesley deserves a shot at that championship, and he's added to the match at the Great American Bash. We will wait and see. For those interested, for WrestleMania 40, WWE announced that Friday, August 18th, they are going to have tickets. Oh, actually, tickets will go on sale. Tickets will go on sale Friday, August 18th. Right now, you could pre-register. But they have some exclusive ticket packages available, priority passes. So if you want to go check it out, go to Ticketmaster or go to WWE.com. And they have everything there. Okay. I'm just looking at my notes here. Three more things, and we're going to get out of here. I want to talk quickly about the ratings for NXT this week and Blood and Guts. I want to talk about the Collision preview because we got three previews for Collision. Then I want to mention briefly about the Rick Steiner incident with WrestleCon. He was put on the upcoming convention, and then he was removed. And I'm very curious to see how some of you feel about what went down this week. Was it fair? Was it unnecessary? Was it about money? We'll talk about it, but anyway, Blood and Guts this past week did 953,000 viewers, which is a nice little increase. Okay. Nothing went under 900,000 the entire night. And AEW Dynamite this week did something they have not done in a very, very, very long time. Might be over a year. It is a similar template of what they have done on Collision. Remember what I said a little over a week ago? Get them through the door. Get them through the door. Just get them through the door and then give them good shit where they don't want to leave. This week, they had no quarter hour that dropped over 100,000 viewers. They didn't have any quarter hour where they dropped 50,000 viewers. They stood consistent the entire night. The highest rated quarter of the entire night was the segment backstage with MJF, Adam Cole, and Roderick Strong, and then Adam Cole and MJF versus Daniel Garcia and Sammy Guevara. That did 977,000 viewers. Now you're going to say to me, DT, wait a minute. You said earlier that they had the highest demo, but Blood and Guts had the highest rating. Okay. That's what you've been reading everywhere. Let me tell you the deception that people are putting out there. The lowest, get this, the lowest quarter of the entire night for Dynamite this week was Hook losing the FTW championship against Jack Perry, then the Don Callis, Chris Jericho video, and Britt Baker versus Kayla Sparks. That did 915,000 viewers. That was the lowest quarter of the night. The second lowest quarter was the second half of Blood and Guts. The third lowest quarter of the night was the first half of Blood and Guts. The overrun that went 3 minutes, the overrun did the highest of the night, 980,000. The 3 minute overrun did 980. Adam Cole and MJF did 977. When you see people online saying that Blood and Guts was the highest rated segment of the entire night, keep in mind they're not telling you, they're talking about 3 minutes. 3 minutes. Just want to show you the deception. NXT. This, I promise you, this is not hype. You're going to be pretty shocked when I tell you an aspect of the rating this week. It's pretty wild. NXT this week did 746,000 viewers. Nice increase. Nothing went under 700,000 for the whole night, with the exception of the next to last quarter, which is Blair Davenport, Roxanne Perez. They had that little video confrontation. Dana Brooke, Kalani Jordan, their video. And that did 699. So it was only 1,000 under 700,000. And that was the lowest part of the night. Get this. 930 to 945 averaged 699. Then you went to the main event, which was Dominic Mysterio versus Wes Lee. There was no overrun. That match went from 699 to 845. It had almost 150,000 fans tuning in just between 9:45 and 10 p.m. Almost 150,000 fans more. You don't ever see that in wrestling when it comes to 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock. Yeah, Bloodline might be, you know, the exception to the rule. But that's pretty wild. They had 700,000 going into that main event, and it jumped up to almost 850. And no overrun. So just wanted to share those tidbits as far as their ratings go. Collision, they have kept it pretty quiet this week. But I hope people realize now, I wasn't saying it to be nasty. I was saying it to be realistic about it. You know, for Collision tonight, they're going to have the aftermath of Ricky Starks beating CM Punk in the Owen Hart tournament. We're also going to get the House of Black defending the Trios titles against the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn. Remember that match in a moment. And then we're also going to see Sky Blue taking on Taya Valkyrie. Now, my friends, let's be honest here. Taya Valkyrie versus Sky Blue, and especially the House of Black defending the Trios titles versus the Acclaimed. The Acclaimed are more the goofiness you see on Dynamite or Rampage. And I'm not criticizing the Acclaimed. But to see suddenly a Trios title match on Collision, it's pretty funny because we talked last week about the bullshit with the Trios title since, I mean, Rampage has been, I mean, Collision's been on the air for now, what, 7 weeks? What's going on with Miro? Didima! What's going on with Andrade? Just because he has a confrontation or an interview segment? I hope you do realize now, what's going on with Hobbs? I hope you do realize now that this is just Saturday Night Dynamite. They can act like there isn't so many car accidents on Saturday. And maybe the bell isn't ring so many times after the match is over. But honestly, the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn on Collision, Sting and Darby Allin revealing their tag partner for Forbidden Door, like all that stuff is just dynamite on Saturday night. I'm not saying that it's good or it's bad. I'm not saying if you should watch it or if you don't. But before they even debuted, it felt that that's what this was going, and that's where it is. So that is your preview. Next week on SmackDown, not only do we have Rey versus Santos Escobar, but they are also going to do Karl Anderson versus Karrion Kross. Now, this is supposed to lead to something that could happen at SummerSlam. We may see AJ Styles get involved with this. And I know what some of you are saying, why they keep going AJ with Karrion Kross. I get it, but this is supposed to lead to something. What that is, we'll have to wait and see. All right. Want to finish with one more thing tonight. This is going to require a little bit of reading. I'll keep it short, but it's definitely something I think needs to be talked about. And it has to do with these two individuals, Giselle Shaw and Rick Steiner. If you remember WrestleMania weekend, Rick Steiner had an incident with Giselle Shaw, little transphobia on Rick Steiner's part. It was what it was. Terrible. To see people, you know, trying to like incorporate Bron Breakker's name into it, I think is ridiculous. What do you expect him to say about his father? Seriously. We're not around Rick Steiner every day. We don't know what's in his heart. We don't know how ignorant he is. We don't know. And again, this is not in defense of Rick Steiner. I tell you how I feel, and I tell you how I things perceive to me. I know, not proud of it, but I know back when I was in my 20s in the 90s, I remember that if you went to a club and you saw all these Jersey Shore wannabe ripoffs, you know, the Jersey Shore before Jersey Shore became popular and they were in a club, you wanted to embarrass one of these guys trying to hit on all the girls, acting like a playboy, looking like Jersey Shore, being really nasty to people, the ultimate insult you could give them is to question their manhood. Plain and simple. Unfortunately, when you get into road rage incidents, you watch the ones on Twitter. If it's a black person and a white person, the white person will usually say some of the worst vile things you could say to a black person because they know it's successful in getting the person mad. Does that mean that the white guy, the black guy, the Jersey Shore guy, the opposite guy, are they racist, homophobic, transphobic, or are they saying something just to get somebody mad? I don't know that answer for Rick Steiner, but Rick Steiner in no way should have treated Giselle Shaw that way. And supposedly he apologized. Now again, I don't know what's in Rick Steiner's heart. I don't know if he sits at his home and over a barbecue and sees all this stuff going on, you know, the news with LGBTQ, and he's like, sounds like that bad cartoon. You know, like, we don't know. I don't know. I can only take it face value for what I see. So Rick Steiner has this incident WrestleMania weekend, and he gets kicked out, and he has, you know, been basically disbarred. Nobody wants to bring him to conventions, and every time his name is mentioned, there's people on the warpath that will do everything possible that he does not get an appearance. So, last week, WrestleCon announces that in August, for SummerSlam weekend, the Steiners will be in attendance for the convention. You will have Rick and Scott Steiner. So, of course, they expected backlash because of what happened to Giselle Shaw and Rick Steiner back in the day. And again, I'm saying this as a human being, as a guy. just straight up, no wrestling personality, no, just straight up series combo right now. Again, I don't know what's in Rick Steiner's heart, but obviously WrestleCon knew there was going to be a lot of backlash. And this is what they said this week in defense of bringing Rick Steiner in. I want you to listen closely. No matter which side you're on, I want you to listen as closely. Rick made completely inappropriate remarks to Giselle Shaw at our event in Los Angeles. As soon as we were made aware of what happened, we swiftly addressed the issue, but we never shared details of what happened at the event. In hindsight, it was probably a mistake not to share more details. I take full responsibility. This is the owner of WrestleCon. He says, however, at no time, then or after, do we condone the remarks of Rick, of what Rick made in Los Angeles. We did not fail to act after we were notified, and as a result, we removed him from the convention for the duration of the event. Rick's poor decision forever impacted his brand, relationships within the wrestling community, and alienated many of his fans. One of the positive things Rick did, and it was not publicized, is that he immediately apologized. He apologized to members of the WrestleCon staff. He apologized to many of his fellow wrestlers. He offered apologies to the members of Impact Wrestling staff. Giselle Shaw chose not to attend Rick's apology, which we understood 100%, supported, and still support to this day. She had no obligation to hear anything from Rick, nor should she feel obligated to accept any apology. So far, I'm fine with everything he has written. But keep in the back of your mind what I just said, read to all of you. Now that we're 3 months beyond this event, I feel that Rick has learned a lot from this huge mistake. I know it's easier to cancel people when they make mistakes than to forgive and help educate. However, sometimes I think it's important that we give people a second chance. That being said, Rick will forever be on a zero-tolerance scale moving forward at any of our events. If we are proven wrong, that he has not learned from his mistakes, we will enforce a permanent ban. That is not to imply that everyone gets one free strike. We continue to strive to have an environment where everybody feels safe and included. If we are faced with issues that compromise the environment, we will take all necessary action. That is Michael Bocaccino of WrestleCon. Thought that was very well written. 2 days later. 2 days later. Same person. Rick Steiner has been removed from WrestleCon. When we allowed Rick Steiner to return to our convention as a vendor and guest of Tony Hunter Promotions. Now, I'll say this right off the bat, everyone. Do you see how quick Mr. Bocaccino, see how quick he separated himself from Rick Steiner? Oh, no, Rick was coming in through Tony Hunter Promotions. To me, pussy move. Let me continue. Was not needed. We didn't need to know who his agent or representative is, but you could see he quickly tried to separate himself. That's weak. Maybe pussy move is a little too extreme. Weak. That's weak. We did not adequately take into account the impact his past words from our last event still held in the LGBTQIA plus community. We initially allowed him to return because, one, we still feel that people deserve a second chance. Two, Rick did make an apology to all parties that were chose to be present. Three, we lacked any type of code or conduct harassment policy that clearly defined our expectations as a convention participant. Okay. After a thoughtful dialogue with Brian Bell from SB Nation's Outsports and host of the LGBT in the Ring podcast, we agreed with his opinion that it was necessary to have some type of public acknowledgement, public apology from Rick Steiner at an absolute minimum. In other words, his apology to everybody involved behind the scenes and offering it to Giselle Shaw directly is not enough. He needs to be put on display and apologize to the world. That's what they have decided to do. Because we understand this issue required great urgency, we gave Rick Steiner 24 hours to make this public statement. Unfortunately, there is none currently, and we do not expect to receive such a statement, and we have therefore made the decision to revoke our permission to let him attend. Then he goes on and talks about code of conduct and everything like that. Listen, they had 3 months to let it sink in what happened. They had 3 months of online backlash. They saw the apologies. They felt the apologies. They said that they believe that Rick has learned from this. But now the only way that he could appear is to go in front of the world, in online, public, and humble himself. This is not me. I apologize. It was stupid. It was an incident. And because he didn't do that within 24 hours, I mean, I understand the time-sensitive stuff because, you know, obviously this is coming up soon. But they had 3 months and then made the decision to bring him back. They were convinced that this is not what is inside Rick Steiner's heart. And because a podcast, a member of the LGBTQ plus A community, said, no, he should apologize to the world. I would not bring him back. I think that's bullshit. In my opinion, you bring him in. You let those fans go up to him. They want to tell him, fuck you for what you did. That was awful. Let him face those people. Let those people. And if anybody's going to say to me, DT, that's wrong because you're creating a hostile environment, this and that. Trust me, anywhere Rick Steiner goes in the wrestling world, he's going to be confronted about this. Should he have made a public apology? Yes. Let me make it clear. Rick Steiner should have recorded a 1 minute video, 2 minute video, put it online, apologizing to anybody he offended. That was not his intention. It's not in my heart. Whatever, how he truly feels. That should have all been clear and addressed before you bring this guy back. And to me, what it felt like for those 2 days are people online threatening not to go, people threatening not to pay money in advance for autographs that had no intention on going. You have thousands of people online threatening not to go where probably 1% of them were actually going. This was never, listen, when WrestleCon and Boca Chino, after 3 months, is about to issue a press release, think about the first statement that I just shared with all of you. When he wrote that press release, he knew he was going to get backlash. He knew that in this day and age, no matter what you say or do, there's going to be a group of people that will never forgive you. Period. I have always said Hulk Hogan should have gone to speaking engagements and, you know, basically addressed some of what he said and, you know, try to. And the reason why he never did that is because he didn't want the younger generation to confront him, you know, for what he said. You know, and he's still paying that price to this day. You see Hulk Hogan, he is not anywhere near. Hulk Hogan honestly should be revered as far as like the Babe Ruth. You know, it's like the biggest person ever in pro wrestling that brought wrestling to the next level. Not the greatest wrestler and not the greatest draw, but still the monumental instrument in the 80s. And it is rarely ever celebrated. And he's designated to what I showed you last week inside his Hulk Hogan place in Florida with a Muppet character going, brother, brother, brother. all because he did not want to be confronted by people. So he stays in his warm little small shell in Florida, and that's as a result of it. Rick Steiner absolutely should have apologized. But these motherfuckers in WrestleCon knew exactly what they were getting into by bringing him back. And because somebody from the LGBTQ community confronted the owner of WrestleCon and said, no, he should apologize to the world before he's brought back, that guy, for 3 months, knowing what he was going to get himself into and knowing that Rick apologized to this person, he doesn't believe that Rick has it in his heart, he's giving him a second chance. Instead of saying to that person, listen, I totally understand why you're saying this, but there was a lot that went on that nobody saw, and he apologized, this and that. And if the person insists, no, he should apologize to the world. You know, that's up to Rick to do. But to turn around and cave and say, no, we're removing him again, to me, I think it's about money. I think it's about money. I don't think it's about cancel culture, Austin. People have a right to be pissed off at Rick Steiner. Absolutely. But to me, this was, we don't want any dirt towards our name, so let's just remove him, give him 24 hours to humble himself in front of the world. That's not, and think about this. Think about this, and I'll let you all go. Think about this. What if Rick Steiner, within those 24 hours, recorded a video on his phone, and WrestleCon posted it, and Rick Steiner's there and says, listen, everybody, I'm not a transphobic. I'm not a homophobic. You know, I said something stupid in the heat of the moment. That's the only thing I thought of that I thought would hurt Giselle Shaw's feelings. And I regret it. And I apologize to everybody who was involved. I've offered an apology to Giselle, whether Giselle wants to accept it or not. That is her right. But I sincerely am sorry. This is not me. And I ask for your forgiveness. And that's it. And you know what would have happened? You would have had 90% of those people that'll just say, we don't believe you. You're only recording it now because you want to be at this convention. That's what would have happened. So this guy making a decision to bring him back and then pulling it 2 days later, you get no vote from me. Weak. Let me know what you think. You're more than welcome to write a comment in the comment section. I will see it. Everyone out there will see it as well. Tell me where I'm wrong with this. You know, I just personally feel that, you know, look, he said what he said and it was fucked up. And, you know, he's going to face people, you know, forever that are going to confront him about this. And maybe the best for Rick Steiner is to keep his mouth shut in the future and understand that if you want to get mad at someone, you want to curse them out, you call him a stupid fuck. Call him an asshole. You know, but don't bring up color. Don't bring up gender. Don't bring up sexuality. Don't bring up, you know, you can't do that. You might think that that'll maximize the pain that you want to instill on someone. But in the end, you're going to be labeled to be someone that you may not. And again, and this guy writes that this is going to stay with Rick for the rest of his life. You know, if you believe that he made a mistake, and then you turn around and write that air, that makes me feel like this guy is just trying to cover his bases and appease everybody out there that, oh, the evil Rick. For all I know, Rick is a transphobe. For all I know, Rick could be an awful motherfucker outside of pro wrestling. I don't know. But all I know is that they knew what they were doing by bringing him back. And they caved. Guys, it's been real. I thank you all for joining me today. If anybody out there would like to, you know, contribute a little something to Shotzi Sisters' recovery from liver cancer, it is tinyurl.com. Oh, I actually still have the graphic up here. Here it is. tinyurl.com /helpshotzisis. That'll bring you directly to the GoFundMe. Everything that came in today, that will go towards her expenses. I will combine it with tomorrow, because tomorrow, do I have a preview banner? I think I do. I absolutely do. Tomorrow, 8.05 p.m. Eastern, you're welcome to join me here for the sit-down. Remember, it is all, not only Q&A, but whatever, everybody who is live, you choose the topics of discussion. You got something from today, something from we just discussed, and you want me, you know, you got a question for me, you want to confront me with something, anything. I show up on Sundays with nothing written down. See, like today, I did something that I don't do recently. I keep my list of topics. It's the same synopsis that you have on the page right now. I keep a list of my topics so I make sure I don't leave anything out. But tomorrow when I show up with this, a blank piece of paper. So you guys that are live, you dictate. And we might do something tomorrow. I was looking at this before. I don't know if it's a good idea. But as I'm looking down, maybe we'll do this Monday. I got LA Knight signed cards. I got Gunther signed cards. I got Dominic Mysterio signed cards. I still got this. It's supposed to be like $500 on eBay, this MJF actual ring-worn something. Maybe we'll do something that if somebody contributes a certain amount, they could get one of those cards. I don't know. We'll see. I'll think about it. All right, everyone. I am out of time. It is 2:15 p.m. here in the afternoon on Saturday. I hope everybody enjoys your weekend. If you know anyone out there you think might like the show, let them know about it. Keep spreading the word. Never enough people tuning in. You should all know that. So I'm going to jet out of here.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to.
I didn't want to jet that fast. I wanted to say, I hope everybody enjoys your weekend. Much love. Stay safe. And I'll catch you either tomorrow on the sit-down, 8.05 p.m. Eastern, or Monday after Raw at 11.05. So be well, everybody. Have a nice weekend and all the best. Take care.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the hosts. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who've claimed they care the most for your life. And now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.